Here at the Product and Packaging Powerhouse, our key mission is really to help with unveiling the realities of product developments, packaging strategies, and business tactics, empowering you, productpreneurs, and brands to advance, ascend, and accelerate your products into your marketplace. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's segment right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. I am your host, Megan Young Gamble. And if you've been rocking with me for some time, you know all of my favorite things. But if this is your first time, welcome. We're always grateful to have you inside of the house to have intentional conversation with industry powerhouses. And guys, I'm so excited and elated to talk with a fellow female owner and also packaging expert in this space, which is Ms. Julia Wilsey. She is a senior sales executive with Mill Rock Packaging, and she has been in the print and packaging industry for 19 years, guys. So she is a vet in this game, okay? And so she is a proud graduate of Paul Cali St. Louis. So she is an avid Mustang, okay? And she also has helped a lot of her clients with millions of boxes from startups to Fortune 500 companies throughout Asia, Europe, and North America. In her free time, Julia is a mentor at Kyle Poly. She's also a coach of Odyssey of the Mind, a Spartan racer. She creates glass art in her home studio and loves spending time with her family, including her husband, with two boys who are very active at 10 and 7, and their lovely puppy, Max. And so, guys, welcome to the show, Ms. Julia Wilsey.
Hey, thank you so much for having me here, Megan. This is such an honor. It's a pleasure to be here. I love your show. I've loved listening to the past episodes. So being here is just, it's thrilling. So thank you so much.
Yes, I love it. And I always love to have badass women who are in this packaging space to be on the show with me. And guys, you're going to hear why I'm calling Julia a badass, okay? Because females are badasses too. And so as we have our conversation today, you'll learn more as to why I call her a badass female in the space, okay? But before we get there, Julia, share a little bit about yourself and how you got into the packaging and the printing industry.
Sure. Well, I was lucky enough to go to Cal Poly University, and that's in San Luis Obispo, and I was in packaging, and I was hired from the campus with R.R. Donnelly, and the company was phenomenal. I was there 10 years. About 14 years ago, I went to my manager and said, hey, look, I want to get into packaging. So I started cold calling on medical device companies, plastic companies, and I got an opportunity to work with a consumer electronic company called Square, now called Block. And one of my clients went to another company, one you might recognize called Facebook, now called Meta. And she said, hey, I want you to come in. We have a new project. And I was like, okay, no idea what to expect. Lo and behold, we developed for one of their newest hardwares. And over time, I did over $30 million a year of business in packaging. So I was, I started from the roots, ground up, cold calling, and finally got here.
I love that. And I'm just curious, like when you first got into your first job as a professional, like what made you want to go to your manager and say, I want to focus on packaging? I'm just curious to hear a little bit more around this.
Yeah. So I was doing all types of printing. So commercial print, magazine, books. And I saw packaging as just this growth central. I mean, everything needs to have a package. And it's definitely going to be growing in the future. Even this is 14 years ago, I was seeing, you know, so much things coming to my own home. That was my first experience with touching and feeling a product, a brand. And I wanted to be part of that experience and helping clients create a better experience for their end users.
Well, I love that. And it's funny because, you know, I always tell people, and I'm very transparent about my own story of how I got into the world of packaging. I'm not going to go into the full depth. Check out episode 2, Detour to Destination. I talk about it all there. But high level, you know, I thought I was going to pharmacy school. And I stumbled into the world of packaging thanks to me having a project management certification. And I was working at a health and beauty. So I didn't even know packaging was like its whole field and industry and how it's a $1 trillion business until I was immersed into it. But people that are not in this space, they're like, packaging like the Amazon boxes? You're like, yeah, that's one element of packaging, right? But that's not all encompassing of packaging. So as you were really starting to get your career going, you know, even 14 years ago now and saying, I want to work in packaging. and really starting to get immersed like with the electronics and the consumer goods, like what are some things you've seen over time change and how we start to utilize, you know, more effective packaging and sustainable packaging nowadays? Like what have you seen in your time frame in the industry?
Sure. You know, 15 years ago, it was about that shelf presence. I had done one box where, I mean, it was probably 2 feet wide. It had these beautiful foam corners that kind of made it rounded. Yeah. It cost $26 per box. I mean, this thing was enormous. And it had foam on the inside, like EPA foams, and it was just not going to be a good quality for sustainable production. So the big change that I've seen is reduction. How to reduce the box. You are going to reduce that you know, presence on the shelf, but you're making it more impactful. How to make it so it catches the eye of the beholder. And to make it more sustainable, right? And when you have that opening experience, you still want that hero product to show itself. But once you take that product out, you want it to be easy for that end consumer to then find its next use, whether it's going to be reducing, you know, reusing it, or it's going to be recycling it, taking it apart, creating those mono materials, and then having it through a recycling stream. So the changes I've seen are definitely having a smaller box, having it more impactful, and having innovative packaging experiences.
And that's really the conversations we're seeing nowadays, right? Like, so you've been actually having like this forward approach or really progressive thinking around what's changing with shelf presence to now reduction of packaging. And now we're in a circular recyclability economy. And what does sustainability mean? And how do you create sustainable packaging? And so, you know, as you start to see, you know, in your 15 years of experience, the reduction of packaging, like what really piqued your interest in wanting to go in depth to understand like the circular economy and the end of use that consumers experience?
Yeah. So with one of the top consumer electronic companies in the Bay Area, they were doing a life cycle assessment with me and my company. And I got to be a part of really understanding from all avenues, the development, the production cycles, and then the final end of life cycle, what that means from a carbon emissions output, how that really relates to what an end customer sees. And I realized how much that packaging plays a role. And how little changes, like if it's, you know, a polypropylene layer on a paper, how much that impacts the overall package and how you can find ways to, you know, make it better for the environment with even just smart, innovative changes. So I was able to work with the client and create ways to reduce their carbon emissions output by looking at their overall holistic program. And that really was insightful to me and inspired me to get more involved in that sustainability space now.
Well, I love that. And now, like seeing what you saw writing on the wall 15 years ago to now being in this current environment where, you know, recyclability is the top conversation and the circular recyclability, what that looks like, how do we roll it out in the infrastructure? Even to now with you working at Mill Rock Packaging as a senior sales executive, how do you help your prospects turn into clients who are really starting to look at what circularity really looks like from a packaging standpoint?
You know, one of the things that I've offered to my clients is taking them through a local, either landfill, a MRF, or a waste management location. And it's a great way, A, to get out of the office, have fun, get to know each other. But also it's so insightful. You learn so much. And what's phenomenal to me is how every location is very different. So when I toured Southern Oregon and Rogue Valley, they have a lot of land and they have very sustainable landfill practices. So they actually will line, you know, their landfills with over 10 feet of rocks, soils, and liners, and then turn that land back into public use land. And it's really a very effective program. They don't recycle every product like they do in Southern Washington. In Southern Washington, they have an opposite problem. Their landfills are going to be full within 20 years, and they don't currently have their next solution, whether it's incineration or trucking their products elsewhere. So they have to really up the recycling processes and making sure that everything gets as recyclable as possible. So taking clients through these locations really helps them and also helps me to develop better packaging, not just for California, but for other locations around our country and our world.
I love that because you are representing the companies, right? Like you are like an ambassador of the company. We can do this based on our capabilities. Here's what we're seeing in the marketplace to help those prospects go into clients or customers as part of understanding the benefits of this new relationship. So I love that approach. But even to your point of how you're walking into the MRFs in these different locations. So what you saw in Oregon versus South Washington, close to each other, but different infrastructure. And with me being in Georgia, you know, that's a whole separate conversation because unfortunately, we don't recycle like most states on the West Coast does. We don't have the infrastructure, you know, like California, Maine, Washington, Oregon, et cetera. And so my question to you would be, when there's no uniformity with recycling, you know, where I'm located in Georgia and where you're located in the Bay Area, what is your thought around getting everybody on quote unquote one accord or how to really start thinking about recyclability for their respective geographical areas?
Absolutely. And that is a huge challenge. In fact, a few weeks ago, I went down to Cal Poly. I spoke to them about circular economy because I want to challenge the students. They are the ones we, in the next 15 to 20 years, we have to create a new program. We have areas like Europe that are absolutely ahead of the game. You know, they're sorting into six, if not eight categories. There's locations in Japan, they actually sort 45 categories, not completely different than what we do here in the US. And it's because their needs and their resources are 100% different. You know, if you live in rural Montana, you don't have that volume to recycle efficiently. It doesn't make sense to force that government to create an infrastructure that won't meet the needs and resources available. So I was talking to a company yesterday, a medical company, and the goal is to be as general as possible to what makes sense, right? So you're going to create a package that's going to be, if possible, monomaterial or easy to separate. So that way, if you are a place recycle, you can easily separate them. And if you don't recycle, make it so it's going to be as sustainable as possible. And that's going to be a key to the overall packaging development.
I appreciate you for sharing that because I'll be honest, like my thoughts on how we recycle, let me rewind. I'm a Southern girl to my core. Hey, I tell people that all the time. I say, y'all, hey, all of those things. And so growing up in Arkansas to now living in Georgia, recycling wasn't a big conversation. It wasn't a standard practice, so to speak, in those areas because we weren't taught that. And so now we're starting to learn a little bit more. We're trying to be more intentional about how we recycle and also be more intentional about the products we purchase and how it's housed in packaging as well, you know, to help with that impact. But I tell people we don't have the right infrastructure. And so looking at it larger, recycling is a great thing, you know, and I think we're making great strides, even in our infancy stage right now, because we're still a little bit behind the EU, quite frankly. So I agree there. But as part of that, I think there is a much larger conversation of what that looks like, you know, and we have representatives going on Capitol Hill to help be the advocates of this industry. And I know you're going to Capitol Hill and speaking with legislation around circular economy and the impact in the packaging industry, especially with packaging EPR heavily talked about right now. So share with me, this is going to be a good in-depth conversation. So it's going to be three parts here. So we'll start with the first one. So as you're speaking on Capitol Hill steps and with legislation, what is working to implement the change around circular economy and also recyclability?
Yeah, one of the great things is the diversity of the advisory board. So last week, SB 54 had a workshop and the advisory boards, you know, introduced themselves. Groups from manufacturers, General Mills, from World Centric there. You have groups from the waste management corporations. And you have the Surfrider organization there. So companies that are trying to make the world a better place and having more recyclability. And by bringing the right people together to talk about the concerns, that's when true change can happen. And EPR regulations, I believe, are going to be an avenue to success. It's bringing the funds needed, hopefully, to the right places to create a better infrastructure and to help organizations and manufacturers to create packaging that's going to be more overall. It's going to be really challenging. Right now, only 11 states of the 50 US states have EPR regulations on the books. To your point, you know, Georgia is going to have different needs. But the more that these EPR regulations are going into effect, the more changes can happen. And hopefully over time, we can implement this across the country.
I appreciate you for sharing that, because I'll be honest, I'm like, I know what we're doing, advocate for it. But what I'm seeing here locally, it's not there all the way, you know? And so even my perception has been a little bit in the middle. So I would say I'm a neutral party, because I see what's going on. I'm reading it. I appreciate people like yourself who are really pushing, having the conversations and part of the advisory board, you know, but what I'm seeing here locally and going outside of just my municipality, I'm like, something has to change. Like, where is the disconnect? So I think to your point, the packaging EPR will definitely help make it more successful and help with having better foundational infrastructure in place, but it doesn't happen overnight. So I get that too. It's going to take time. And so continuing on with your conversations at Capitol Hill, you know, what are some of the guidelines and regulations or sources that brands should really start reviewing, add to their toolkit, you know, to really understand what's being talked about, you know, reference of recycling, sustainable packaging, and supply chain, because it's all part of the circular economy?
Well, I think the reason why the three prongs of recycling is reduce, reuse, and recycle is because reduce is most important. So what I recommend to brands is talk to professionals like you, Megan, to packaging engineers, and figure out how to best reduce their current packaging. Being innovative is going to be key. You know, having a packaging engineer to redesign the package, to have less than 40% air, to create an open experience that's easy, it's fun, and cost effective, it does take a lot of thought process and people who understand. For example, at Mill Rock Packaging, we have large format presses and then standard 40-inch presses, because we want to find packaging that's going to fit with as little waste as possible. We want to reduce the amount of waste. Talking to a wine company this week, and their package right now, you get 4 up on a sheet, but we can redesign it to be 8 up on a sheet. So we're making, 50% reduction in cost and materials. I mean, it's truly innovative to find ways to reduce as much as possible. And the only way to do that is to look outside your sphere and have professionals like you or other packaging engineers review your products and your packaging and find, you know, ways to have better solutions.
So guys, if you've listened to any of our prior segments, I tell people this is something that requires all hands on deck. So meaning you need to have Joya, who has insight in speaking on Capitol Hill. You need myself as a project executioner. You need a packaging engineer. You need regulatory. You need legal. You need all these different stakeholders who are around packaging and print and fulfillment and operations, supply chain. It's a whole thing that really should be at the table to have those conversations, to drive decision-making, to be the advisors, like Julia mentioned, you know, with on Capitol Hill, you know, with waste management, General Mills, et cetera. We need those same things in place at our tables for the brands that we're creating. So guys, please don't think that you can create packaging all on your own. Have everybody at the table so we can all be offering the right effective solutions for your brands and the products that you're creating. And Julia's saying the same things that I say on the prior podcast too. So she's validating what we're saying right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. And so continuing on, because we're going to talk about innovations around packaging. And so I would love for you to share a little bit about what innovative solutions you're seeing, or even what Mill Rock Packaging is currently doing, like the large format printing presses, where it's going from four items on the sheet to now 8 items on the sheet. That's one great aspect. Well, what are some other innovative solutions you're seeing within the space as well?
Yeah, I think one of the things is looking holistically at how a product is being developed and then shipped and then used. So for example, these gorgeous gourmet food boxes, and they create these towers, and they used to do them in a rigid box format, which is very expensive for shipping. They ship in a lot of air. So one of the things that we've looked at is creating a box that's a paperboard box that when you erect it, it looks the exact same as a rigid box. And you have a very similar opening experience. It's very easy for an end user to break it down and recycle it. And the huge advantage of that is it's not just the package itself, but the upstream costs of shipping and storage. And we're reducing that logistics by over 70% from a fully erected box down to a flat box. So sustainability is not just about the material. It's also about your carbon emissions through that life cycle assessment. So looking at that entire box and even outside the box, that is part of the key of that sustainability process.
Well, wait, guys, you hear what Julia's saying right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse, right? And I hope you all are taking notes or pause and rewind to go back, because sustainable packaging is not just about the materials. And that's a big misconception that I hear from a lot of indie and emerging brands. They're like, well, it's just the materials. No, that's one element. And that's great. However, we need to look at the greater picture. And it's okay for you to implement certain things incrementally too, as part of like your sustainable initiatives and what that looks like. But don't greenwash. We're not doing everything. Talk about what you're actually doing, but also partnering with people like Julia, Mill Rock Packaging, to have those conversations and see where there's an area of opportunity to reduce packaging, and also looking at your full supply chain processes. Because if you're able to get almost up to 70%, of reduction, like that's huge. Like, look how much that would impact the bottom line for a company, and where those funds could then be reallocated, So I think those are great opportunities and things I didn't even think about, and ways to reduce that carbon emission and the impact, and looking at everything comprehensively yet holistically as well. So I love that. So going back to Capitol Hill, okay, you talked about what's working well to implement the change. You shared some guidelines and things that we must consider to add to our toolkit. So now, what's been challenging around your advocacy in this space?
Yeah, so you had alluded to it before, but the infrastructure is simply not there, both on a large scale, but also even in here in California. And it's really challenging because there's a lot of great companies that have innovative products. But for example, those PLA plastics, those utensils that are saying we're compostable, but then unfortunately most facilities cannot break it down efficiently. And it's causing more of a problem. It's becoming a contamination rather than being a environmental savior. And I want these companies to succeed. I feel that these innovative companies with these compostable products are going to be an avenue for their economy if the infrastructure is in place. But right now we have a chicken and the egg, right? Which is going to come first. It's not there yet. And that is a huge challenge.
But think about it, is change doesn't come by staying comfortable, right? I feel like we're all in a state of being uncomfortable, how we do different things, how we perceive different things, and also what we're taught. But now we're also like, we want to make an impact too, So how can we be more intentional about what we purchase? I'm trying to be more intentional about what I put in, what I ingest, what I drink, what I eat, what do I apply topically, to even my environmental conditions. So we're looking at everything holistically and like, what does this mean not only for me, but also the earth? We have to live here. We have to survive off oxygen. And if we don't have enough because of the contamination and pollutants, then our life expectancy, it starts becoming a bigger conversation. So I appreciate you for being the advocate in the space, really being intentional to go and talk to politicians and legislators to be like, hey, we're here. We have to adopt this. If other countries, like you mentioned, EU is separating things, it's 6 to 8 different areas. Japan is doing it. We're always a leader in that space. We barely have one, right? for sorting, So it is a much needed conversation, and we have the people advocating as the change agents and the change makers, which is you. And so guys, if you're not connected with Julia to follow her efforts, I need you to do so because the link is down in the show notes for you all to follow her directly on LinkedIn, get engaged with her, ask her questions, because she is being featured in multiple publications like Snack Magazine. And I want to ask you a question based upon an excerpt from there as well. And so from your Snack Magazine article, which is called Unpacking the Horizon, link is down in the show notes for you. Okay, plug. So you shared California SB 54 Act aims to reduce plastic recycling. By 2032, California is targeting a 25% reduction in plastic packaging, 65% recyclability of all single-use plastic packaging, and 100% of total packaging to be recyclable or compostable. Now, for those of us who aren't really privy to this information, break this down for us. What does this mean, you know, from your excerpt, and what should we be doing now to be part of this change coming down the road?
Absolutely. So what California is looking is both the inputs and the outputs of packaging. So single-use plastic packaging is obviously what this EPR is going after, you know, trying to get a reduction of that by 25%, finding ways to recycle up to 65%. And as you probably know, right now we're at a 5 to 9% recycling for single-use plastics. So really that's a huge jump to get to 65%. And then the final output of 100% recyclable overall packaging. So that's not just plastics, you're looking at everything. And I think, you know, as you were saying, consumers need to be aware of what's going on. And when we're buying products, looking for both inputs and outputs, right? Mm-hmm. What is that package made of? Is it virgin or is it something that's actually from recycled material? A lot of companies are looking at like a 30% post-consumer waste, which is a good thing because if you're demanding recycled products, then it allows the paper mills to create more recycled paper.
Yeah.
And now you're going to have more of that circular economy. The demand and supply is both in sync, but also looking at other inputs. I love a company called Paperworks that does a 100% recycled fiber, which is actually a mixture of a post-consumer and pre-consumer waste. Pre-consumer, meaning it's from commercial plants and packaging plants. Before it goes into the marketplace, it's their scraps, as well as Amazon boxes and Target boxes, and breaking that down and then mixing it. So finding that input of either a post-consumer or pre-consumer waste and having some recyclability, that's really important. And then what the EPR is going after is also that end recyclability. Have labeling that is legitimate, that saying, hey, this is recyclable, but then having at least 60% of locations allowing for curbside recyclability of that product. And California is going to become much more strict about that recyclability claim. So it's really important for manufacturers and brands to be aware of that and to make sure that their recyclability claims are accurate. And we'll see more of that coming forward.
I think the transparency part is something I think a lot of us are going to definitely find interesting, you know, because we're seeing a lot of greenwashing. Seeing it, right? And it's like, okay, where's the data to substantiate what you're mentioning? And some can produce, right? But then others are not able to, but then it's starting to become a negative perception around all of what, like sustainable metrics and practices, things of that sort. You're like, is it real or is it fluff? That's even my perspective. And I'm being honest, and I work in the space, you know? So I think to your point, you know, being able to have this information and also to see what California is doing, how we can start adopting best practices now. What does that mean? You know, so if I'm looking at in the beauty world, we utilize single-use plastics all the time for sampling programs, you know, so now it makes us look at the picture much greater of, okay, what does our sampling program now look like? You know, what are the retailers? What are they now starting to require? You know, are they following what California's SB 54 Act is talking about, you know, or are they having even stringent requirements around single-use plastics and things of that sort? So it's a much bigger conversation that has to really be looked at. And I think to your point earlier, Julia, you have to have the right people at the table to think about what are the innovative solutions, who are the right manufacturing partners. Okay, I hope y'all consider Millrock, because Julia's talking about what they're doing and it's working. You know, so what are those ways of how to reduce waste? How are we starting to think about what's coming down the pipeline? Packaging EPR, we see 11 out of 50 states that have enacted this. So we're seeing some great traction, still a ways to go, But if people want to stay abreast of this respective California SB 54 Act or any other regulations around circular economy, what resources would you recommend that they check out and add to their toolkit?
Yeah, definitely staying on top of it is a challenge. There are multiple organizations out there that is exactly what they're doing. I know you went to the SpecRight conference, and that was definitely, you know, talked about who to talk to understand the most current regulations. Having the professionals help you out is going to be key. You know, if you're more curious, like which I am curious. So I actually called CMA organization, that's the Compost Manufacturing Alliance, to really understand, okay, what is coming down the pipeline? What is allowed and not allowed in certain regions? And remaining curious is key. And then, you know, having podcasts like Product Packaging Podcast, listening to Corey Connors or Adam Peake, there's a lot information out there and available. For myself, I also have, you know, daily newsletters, the industry intelligence newsletters, you know, medical journals, etc., kind of keeping me abreast of what's going on out there as well.
Oh, we, yes. And guys, I tell you all the time, I stay a student. And that's really one of the reasons why the podcast was created, because a lot of times we can get so lost in just our own world, just doing our job that we're good at. But as part of that, there's so many things happening outside of our roles that we really need to give greater context. And so I'm here as a student learning from Julia, and even with researching for our conversation today, like, oh my gosh, like I need to be thinking about this, like single-use plastics in beauty world. What does it look like? Because Ulta, Sephora, Kohl's, Macy's, every retailer, they always have those things on pop displays, point of purchase, all of those things. And it's like quick little grab and goes as part of cash flow. So now it's like, how do we think about this much greater? So I'm staying a student in our conversation with Julia. And also, you know, for resources like Ellen MacArthur Foundation has been a great resource for me, as well as like the Sustainable Packaging Coalition. Shout out to Adam and Corey. They've both been on my podcast. I've been on both of theirs, as well as Avilio Matos, because he talks about packaging design, leveraging AI. But what does that look like, you know, as part of reduction of, you know, in sustainable packaging? He talks about that too. So we have a lot of people in, well, I would say a lot, but quite a bit of people on podcasts, but there are countless professionals like Julia who you can connect with. They'll be happy to say, hey, check this out, or follow them so you can always stay abreast of what they're doing in the conversations as well. So Julia, I appreciate you for sharing those resources, because I think that's how we all learn and grow and stay a student in this respective field, because it's so much and there's no way we can stay abreast of every single thing. So I appreciate you for sharing. And so as you're starting to think about and really adopt practices and brands to really utilize sustainable packaging, and you've worked with countless brands across North America, Asia, and Europe, are you seeing innovations in those other countries around materials or design that are driving around the circular economy in the packaging space?
Absolutely. A huge part is also the regionalization. So, you know, multiple years ago in Asia, they were using a lot of plastic liners, like a polypropylene liner, on their papers because their paper fibers tend to be a lot shorter. So one of the changes that we've seen is having innovative coatings to replicate that protection. In Europe, rather than using SBS stocks, which are not as available, they use more the chemically made FBB pulp stocks. So using regionally sourced paper. And in the US, finding solutions that are going to be, you know, local solutions. I'll give you an example. There was a company that was doing a corrugate, a wall corrugate. It was a BC corrugate. And they wanted to find a way to make it a single wall, but they needed to be more rigid, more strict. So we actually were able to custom make a single C flute corrugate using a thicker liner on the top and bottom. And it actually has the same protection qualities, but it's a lot less material and less cost. Millrock Packaging can custom make corrugate packaging out of our Renton facility. So we're able to really be innovative to find a local solution. So to answer your question, the way to be more innovative is to understand the local resources available and then utilizing technologies and materials, whether you're North America, Europe, or Asia.
Oh, wait, see, that's what I'm saying. I'm staying a student. Okay. Because there's so much that is being done international that we may not see. And sometimes we may not even get to read in transparency. So how are you starting, you know, so it's like, how do you get all this information? How are you staying abreast of all these innovations? And Julia's sharing it right here, guys, on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. So you guys can stay informed. You can go research it further for yourself. Like, I'm actually going to be looking at EU, like how they're sourcing more regional specialized paper in their area, because I think that could be something we can start to adopt as well. Like in Georgia, we have beautiful trees. It's nothing like the South. Even Arkansas, we're called the natural state for a reason, you know? So as part of that, like, what does that look like, you know, here in the U.S., even in our own areas? I know certain forests are allocated for manufacturers for their FSC paper, you know? So what does that look like? What's part of the storytelling without greenwashing and having the data around it too? So I think that's key. And so last question I'll ask you is, you're so excited about circular economy. You're so excited about packaging and print. What gets you excited outside of this space? Because I know we could talk all day about regulations, packaging EPR, circular economy, eco-friendly packaging, sustainability, all those things. But what excites you outside of the professional career?
So there's two I want to highlight. One is mentorship. I absolutely love being a mentor for young packaging professionals. So for Cal Poly, I'm actually mentoring three right now, but it's both in packaging and graphic communications. And the other one is coaching. I'm a coach for Odyssey of the Mind. And if your listeners aren't familiar with it, they're welcome to message me because I will go on for hours about it. It's a creativity program for kindergarten all the way through college. And I've been a coach for my son and his group. And it's amazing. They're only in fourth grade, so they're very young for being in their competition level. And they just won their state competition. So they're going to go to the world competition in Ames, Iowa. And I'm over the moon proud of him and his creative team. So it's just so much fun to be a coach and to give back to that next generation.
I love that. And congratulations to you and your son's team. Like, that's exciting. And it's also a full circle moment for what I understand too. So share a little bit about this full circle moment.
I know, it's crazy. So when I was in fifth grade, I actually did the same problem called the classics. And my team of six, also four girls and two boys, went to Ames, Iowa for world finals back in 1994. So 30 years ago, I still have that same shirt. It's crazy. And 30 years later, I get to go back to Ames, Iowa and celebrate with my son and his friends and get to have that full circularity and that incredible experience. It's unbelievable.
I love that for you, for your son, for the team. Like, that's just amazing how it's come full circle. And we're going to almost coin you as the queen of circularity, okay, after this podcast, because even in our conversations today and also prior, you've shared with me a couple of full circle moments. And so I'm so happy to hear this for you and your son. Like, that's such an accomplishment. And guys, if you would like to learn more about Odyssey of the Mind, I will put the organization's link down in the show notes for you all. And also encourage you to reach out to Julia so she can share more around it and how they're going to the world finals. Like, this is huge. Like, hey, let's turn up for it. I love it. So thank you so much for sharing. And so as we're starting to wrap up our time for today, before we get into our power rounds, what is one piece of advice you would like to leave your listeners with around being intentional, or, you know, circularity, what they can do, where to get started, or anything? What's one piece of advice you would give them?
I think being intentional is key, right? Think about your product. Can it be reused? Can it be refilled? Can it be reduced? And then can it be recycled? Every product is different. And every product has the ability to be more innovative. So what can you do with your product, with that line, to make it better? And it may not be using paper. It may not be, you know, using plastics. It's going to be unique to them. But being intentional is key.
Intentional is key. That's the message for today. Okay. From the queen of circularity herself. Miss Julia, right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. So, Julia, thank you so much for this intentional conversation. And guys, this is just a snippet, okay? Because we can go on and on and on and on about this conversation. But it's a timely conversation because everybody's starting to look at their ESG initiatives in corporate, looking at sustainable packaging. What does that look like? What are retailers starting to do? What is our, you know, state legislation starting to do? Where are we launching at international? It's a big picture, guys. And it's a lot of different pieces of the puzzle. But if you have the right team members at the table, it will help you create that full picture, which is your masterpiece. Okay. So make sure you do contact Julia. All of her information will be down in the show notes. But before we conclude today, we like to end our segments with our power round. So this is a lightning speed of fast, fun, fast facts about our guests. And guys, as I mentioned in her introduction, Julia has a glass studio in her home. Okay, so we're going to talk about that. And then she also can still do the oversplits. Impressive. And also, she shared this with me in our prior conversation, but she was one of the first females to start a wrestling team at her high school that is still going on to this day. So that's why I say we talk about bad girl energy, badass energy, female energy at that. So guys, that's just fun. A little bit of fun, fast facts about Julia, but we're going to put 60 seconds on the clock to ask her about some specific questions around her fun facts. And Julia, you ready to rock and roll?
I'm ready, girl.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Okay. So since you have a glass studio in your home, what type of glass artwork do you produce? Is it flame work, blow molding, or something else? And if you have something, show us.
So I do a couple types. I have a borosilicate glass studio. So I'm using mostly a torch that's a propane oxygen tank. So I love making like little hoods like this or my little necklace. And then I also do melded glass in a kiln that I have in my garage.
I just did glass blowing class, and that's a whole nother topic. So if you were to create a piece of art that represents your career, what would it look like?
Well, I love this question. I would have to say a green heart, because you have to have passion with what you do. You have to love what you do every day. It's a career, not just a job. And for me, it's a heart. And then also green for the sustainability. I think having an eco-friendly package and having it green is key. So now I got to go home and do another green heart.
I love it. I can't wait to see it. So you can still do the oversplits, which is impressive. What's one piece of advice for increasing or maintaining one's flexibility?
You got to keep everything in life. It takes a practice and it takes, you know, commitment. So, hey, if you're watching a TV show, just go on the carpet and throw in the splits, hanging out with the kids, you know, play with some gymnastics. But you got to keep doing it with everything every day. Practice makes perfect.
Okay, I like it. And last question. If you were to ship your glass art pieces, how would you package it and ship it using eco-friendly packaging?
So I have done it, especially leaks and stuff, which is hard. I have to wrap it in paper. So I have lots of paper. I crumple it up. So I'm getting a nice little foundation and I put that in a box. Not the best opening experience because you don't get to see the glass right away, but it protects it and everything is 100% recyclable in the end.
I love that. So guys, Julia is doing what we talked about right here on the show, thinking about the circular economy in reference of your packaging. So she's doing that with her own glass pieces. So you see, guys, it doesn't take a lot to start adopting more sustainable packaging and eco-friendly packaging items. It's really thinking through what is the intended use of the product and also the experience for your consumers. So thank you, Julia, for participating in our power round. And I want to go back to your hummingbird. Can you put it back on display really quick?
Yeah. So here's a couple of them. So this is the hummingbird.
That's beautiful. And like the intricate beaks, like, oh, like I love that. And the green one. So what inspired you to create like your exclusive hummingbird glass pieces?
So a dear friend of mine, Bridget Porter, unfortunately, her son passed away at age 11 from a heart defect. And hummingbirds was her symbol for her son. So she asked me to make her a glass hummingbird. So I didn't know how to do it at first. So I had to do some research. I made her one. And then I decided to make her a bunch more for her to give to family and friends and for her nonprofit organization. She's really done a great job of bringing out that information. The heart of defect is Lloyds Dietz. So she's now on the board of directors for Lloyds Dietz Foundation, as well as the John Ritter Foundation for Aorta Defects. So I do that in honor of her and her son. Her son's name is Connor.
Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And just want to send a prayer and a shout out to Bridget as well. You know, here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse, you're welcome to always join us. Know that you have a community supporting you and your family around this. And also, I will include both of the foundations down in the show notes for you all to learn more about the John Ritter Foundation, as well as the Lloyd Dietz Foundation, so you all could become more educated around this disease, because there's no reason why we should have to experience this and not be educated, and also how to support. And so sending my love to you, Bridget, to you and your family. Julia, thank you so much for sharing. That's beautiful. And I appreciate you for continuing to support her mission in honor of her son, Connor, as well.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much again.
Of course. Of course. So guys, all that information will be down in the show notes for you all. And guys, we're about to be a little teary-eyed because I could cry right now, because it's so much that we all can do, and just supporting one another, being kind. We never know what somebody is going through at the end of the day. So we're here at the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. We are a community. We're like family inside the house together. So we want to support each other in those endeavors. So Julia, thank you so much for your time today, being part of the conversation, the queen of circularity. Now you have to create a green heart for your new necklace, and also continue to make the beautiful hummingbirds in your glass studio to support Bridget and Honor and Connor. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, guys. So for today's conversation, all the different links and resources we talked about right here on the show will be down in the show notes for you all, as well as to learn more about both the foundations as well. So please make sure you do check it out. And as a reminder, our net worth is based upon our network. So make sure you do share this with at least 5 professionals in your space. And also make sure to show some love to Bridget as well. Let her know that we're keeping her and her family in our prayers as well. So we'll include Bridget's information down below as well to connect with her. And she's in packaging too. So guys, thank you all so much for being part of our conversation. Make sure to be intentional about what you're creating. Have multiple stakeholders at the table and stock your toolkit to understand the circular economy. It's a whole lot, but you have to eat the elephant one bite at a time. But make sure you do get connected with Julia as well. Her information is in the show notes, so you can learn more of how she is advocating for a circular economy on Capitol Hill steps in Snack Magazine, featuring Unpacking Horizon, and all the different efforts around her coaching for Odyssey of the Mind team. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in to today's segment. Make sure you do like, follow, and subscribe. And we'll see you on the next one right here at the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. Talk to you soon.